She was handed over like a debt, no warning, no goodbye. Just Darius's voice, cold and final, telling her she was leaving with strangers before sunrise. She cried the whole first hour of the drive. By the second hour, she stopped, because something ancient was waking up inside her, and it was angry. When Darius realizes that the thing he gave away so easily was the only thing that was ever going to matter, by then it is already too late. It is always already too late. Chapter 1. The envelope was on the bed when she woke up. Ayla saw it before she saw anything else, before the gray morning light bleeding through. The curtains before she registered the cold side of the mattress where Darius hadn't slept. Just the envelope, cream-colored, sealed. Her name written across the front in handwriting that wasn't his. Her stomach dropped before her brain caught up. She sat up slowly, reached for it. Her fingers were steady, but something deep in her chest was already pulling tight, already bracing, the way a body does when it knows something the mind is still refusing to accept. She opened it, read it once, read it again. The words didn't change. You are to be transferred to the care of Alpha Rory Callahan of the Ashvale Pack. Departure is at 5 a.m. Your belongings have been arranged. This agreement is final and binding under pack law. No signature from Darius. Just a pack seal stamped at the bottom like a property deed. Official. Bloodless. The kind of document you stamp when you're transferring ownership of land or livestock, or anything that doesn't have a voice worth consulting. Ayla sat there for a long moment with the paper in her hands and the silence pressing in from every wall transferred. She turned the word over in her mind the way you turn a stone, looking for something softer underneath. There was nothing softer underneath. She set the letter down very carefully on the nightstand, like setting down something that might break. Though she couldn't have said what. Her composure, maybe. The last thin wall between her chest and everything behind it. She stood up, walked to the window. Outside, the pack grounds were still asleep. The training fields dark and empty. The great hall lit from the inside, smoke rising slow from the kitchen chimneys. Someone already starting the morning fires. A world still turning, still breathing, completely indifferent to the letter on her nightstand. She had loved this view once. She had stood at this exact window 2 years ago, the first morning after Darius had brought her here, and felt something so enormous she hadn't had a word for it. Safety, maybe, belonging, the particular warmth of a place that wants you. She pressed two fingers against the cold glass now. He loved me, she thought, and then quieter, lower from somewhere she didn't want to go. Didn't he? She turned away from the window before she could answer herself. The shower was as hot as it would go. She stood under it until the heat stopped feeling like heat and started feeling like pressure. Like something pinning her in place so she didn't have to move yet, didn't have to become the woman who walked out of this house carrying packed bags. She hadn't packed herself, because that was the detail that kept snagging. That someone had packed her bags while she slept beside Darius, while she curled into the familiar warmth of him and dreamed whatever small. Ordinary dream had visited her that last night. Someone had been moving through her closets, folding her things, deciding what version of her life was worth taking, and Darius had let them, had probably told them what to take. She got out of the shower, dressed, pulled her red curls back from her face with hands that were somehow not shaking. She didn't understand why they weren't shaking. She felt like the inside of a shaken thing, all turbulence and no surface. But her hands were still. She sat on the edge of the bed and waited for 58 a.m. a knock at the door. Not Darius, Gregor, one of his senior enforcers, barrel-chested, eyes that perpetually slid past her like she wasn't quite solid enough to land on. He said, "It's time," like she hadn't been awake for an hour already. Like she needed a man who'd never once said her name to come tell her when her own life was. "Starting, I know," she said. She picked up her coat, followed him. The hallway was empty. The stairs were empty. She walked through the ground floor of the pack house that had been her home for 2 years, and there was no one. No familiar face. No one to say her name in a voice that meant something. Just Gregor's wide back, moving ahead of her, and the sound of her own boots on the floor. She walked 1,000 times. She kept waiting for a door to open. For his voice, loud, the kind of loud that claimed space, that made rooms feel occupied even before he entered them. The voice she'd fallen asleep to and woken to for 2 years. To come rolling down the corridor and say, "Stop, wait, I made a mistake." The front door opened. Cold pre-dawn air hit her face like a flat palm outside. An SUV was idling in the gravel, black. Two men she didn't recognize stood beside it, Ashvale colors on their jackets, and leaning against the front hood with his arms loosely crossed and his breath rising white in the cold. He was younger than she'd expected. Dark curls, thick, a little wild, like he'd stopped fighting them years ago, fell across his forehead. His jaw was sharp, his features the kind of handsome that didn't announce itself loudly, but settled into your vision and stayed. He was broad across the shoulders in a way that made the cold air around him seem to recalibrate, and there was something in the way he stood, unhurried, completely still. like a man who had never once needed to fill silence with movement, that caught her off guard in the middle of her own devastation. He was watching her cross the gravel, hadn't looked away since she came through the door, he didn't smile. But something moved through his expression as she got closer, something quick and unguarded that was gone before she could name it. Leaving his face composed and careful again. Ayla, he said. Just her name. No title. No the Luna of or former maid of. Just her name. Like it meant something standing alone. She stopped a few feet from him, lifted her chin. Alpha Callahan. Rory. He pushed off the hood of the SUV. Easy and unhurried. You don't have to call me that. She didn't answer. She was looking past his shoulder at the pack house one last time. At the upstairs windows. At the one window specifically that looked out from Darius's office, where he worked late most nights. Where the light burned past midnight, where she used to bring him coffee he never asked for and he always drank. The light was off. He wasn't there. Of course he wasn't there. She looked back at Rory, and whatever he saw move across her face in that moment, whatever naked, unguarded thing she failed to hide in the half second before she locked it down, it made something tighten in his jaw, a small, barely visible thing, like it cost him something to witness it and stay still. He reached past her and opened the rear door of the SUV himself. Not a command. Not a performance. Just a door held open, waiting. It's warm inside, he said quietly. She got in. The door closed with a soft final sound. The engine shifted. The gravel crunched under the tires, and then they were moving through the packed gates, down the long road, through the dark pines. And then the gates were gone, and the trees closed in. And Darius's territory fell away behind her like a shore you've already lost sight of. She watched it go. She told herself she wouldn't cry. She had decided in the shower, under the hot water, that she would not give this moment her tears, that she would hold herself together until she was somewhere private and alone and could come apart. Without witnesses, she made it 23 minutes. The first tear was quiet, just one. She turned her face toward the window and pressed her temple to the cold glass, and kept her breathing even and controlled, and it almost worked. It almost held, and then the second tear came in the third, and something in her sternum cracked open like a door kicked off its hinges, and she was crying silently, with her hand pressed hard over her mouth, and her whole body turned away from the two men in the front seats. She didn't make a sound. She was very careful not to make a sound. But she caught Rory's eyes in the rearview mirror, just for a second, just a flash of dark eyes finding hers in the glass. And then he looked away deliberately, like looking away was something he was choosing to give her, like her grief was a private room and he was closing the door on his side of it. She pressed her forehead harder against the glass. The road unspooled in the dark ahead of them, miles of pine and shadow and a sky just starting to bleed the first pale gray at its edge. And somewhere below the grief, below the humiliation that sat in her chest like a swallowed coal, below the disbelief that kept cycling back through the words final and binding, something else moved, not anger, not yet, something older than anger, something that had been asleep a long time and was now slowly, in the dark of this car on this road, away from everything she thought she knew, opening its eyes. She didn't know what it was. She pressed her hand flat against her sternum and felt her own heartbeat, steady and stubborn beneath her palm. It beat like a thing that had no intention of breaking. Chapter 2. Asheville Territory announced itself before the gates did. Ayla felt it first as a change in the air, something heavier, older, like the atmosphere had more weight to it, like the trees here had been standing longer and knew more. The pines were massive, ancient things. Their canopy so thick overhead that the morning light came through in long, separated shafts rather than open sky. Even inside the SUV, she could feel the shift. Something in her spine straightened without her telling it to. She didn't say anything. She just watched. The gates were iron, older than anything she'd seen in Darius's territory, engraved with symbols she didn't recognize, moon phases. Something that might have been a wolf mid-transformation, caught between two shapes. The metal looked like it had been standing there longer than anyone alive could remember. The guards at the gate were older wolves, white at their temples, faces that had been weathered by decades of service. When the SUV slowed and Rory lowered his window, both men bowed. Not a nod, not a deferential tilt, a full deliberate bow, Ayla noticed it. Filed it away, they drove through. The Asheville pack house was nothing like what she'd expected. She'd expected something trying to prove something. The way powerful packs often built their headquarters like monuments to their own dominance. Instead, this was stone and timber, old and enormous, set into the side of a hill like it had grown there, climbing vines across the east wall. Warm light from inside windows, the smell of wood smoke and pine sap and something deeper under it, something mineral and ancient, like the earth itself had a different composition here. Rory got out first. He came around and opened her door before anyone else could. She noticed that too. Not because it was grand, he did it quietly without ceremony, but because it was a choice, a deliberate, repeated choice to be the one who opened doors for her. She stepped out onto the stone drive, and then she stopped. Because the wolves already gathered outside, pack members going about their morning, enforcers arriving for shift change, a group of young wolves crossing the far end of the grounds had gone still, all of them, just for a moment. Just one suspended breath of collective stillness, the way a forest goes quiet before something significant moves through it. Then they resumed what they were doing. But Ayla had felt it, that pause. That moment of collective animal instinct responding to something her human eyes couldn't see. She looked at Rory. His expression was unreadable. "Come on," he said. "I'll show you to your rooms." Her rooms were in the east wing of the pack house. 3 rooms, a bedroom, a sitting room, a bathroom with a wide window looking out over the hill and the tree line beyond. More than she'd had in Darius's pack house, where she'd existed primarily in his space, her belongings arranged around the perimeter of a life that was mostly his. These rooms had their own key. Rory put it in her hand without explanation, like it was obvious that she should have a key, like the concept of a woman having a locked door that was only hers was too basic to require comment. "Meals are at 7, noon, and 6, he said, standing in the doorway of the sitting room with one hand on the frame. "But the kitchen is open all hours. Help yourself to anything." He paused. "You're not a prisoner here, Ayla. I want to be clear about that," she looked at him. "Then what am I?" He held her gaze, didn't look away, and didn't flinch. "My guest," he said, "until you decide what you want to be." He left her with that, pulled the door closed behind him, but not all the way. Left it open an inch, like even that small gesture was deliberate. Like closing it fully would have felt like a different kind of trap. She stood in the middle of the sitting room for a long moment. Then she crossed to the window and looked out at Ashvale territory spreading below her. The training grounds, the tree line, the distant suggestion of something stone and ancient rising above the canopy at the far edge of the land, and tried to locate herself inside this new reality. She was someone's guest now. She was no one's mate. She was 23 years old and standing in a room with a key that was only hers, in a territory that wasn't his, in a life she hadn't chosen and couldn't yet see the shape of. She pressed the key into her palm hard enough to feel the teeth of it. The first week passed quietly. Rory didn't push, didn't hover. He gave her space the way a careful man gives space, not by disappearing, but by making sure she always knew where he was without requiring anything from her. He was at meals. He was on the training grounds in the mornings, visible from her window, running drills with his enforcers. He knocked before he came near her wing, and he always announced himself, and he never, not once, made her feel watched. She started coming down to dinner, then to breakfast. On the 8th morning, she walked the territory alone, just to see it, just to feel the edges of the land under her feet, and 3 separate wolves she hadn't met crossed her path and stopped and lowered their heads. Not a bow, something between a bow and something more, something reverent, almost. She didn't recognize any of them. They didn't introduce themselves. They just lowered their heads and waited until she had passed. She told Rory about it that evening. They were sitting on the stone steps at the back of the pack house, a space he'd shown her on day 3. A quiet corner with a view of the eastern hill and a fire pit that he'd lit without asking whether she wanted. Warmth, just lit it and sat down nearby. He'd been doing that. Small things, fires and food and unlocked doors. He listened to her describe the bowing wolves with his elbows on his knees and his dark eyes on the middle distance. "How many times has that happened?" he asked. "3 times today, 2 yesterday." He was quiet, Rory. "I don't know what it means yet," he said. And she believed him, because he said it without deflection, without the particular smoothness of a man managing information. He said it like a man genuinely turning a problem over in the dark. "But I'm going to find out." She looked at him sidelong. The fire made shadows move across his jaw, the curl of his dark hair at his temple. "You're not scared of it?" "No." He looked at her then, direct and uncomplicated. "Are you?" She thought about it honestly. "I don't know what I am," she said. He nodded, like that was a reasonable answer, like uncertainty was something he had respect for. They sat there until the fire burned low. She didn't move to leave, and he didn't suggest it, and the silence between them was, for the first time since she'd woken up to that envelope on her nightstand, not a painful thing, just a silence, just 2 people sitting at the edge of something neither of them understood yet. Her hand was resting on the stone step beside her. His was 3 inches away, neither of them moved, but she was aware of those 3 inches in a way that made her breath slow and even and careful, in a way that had nothing to do with grief and everything to do with something entirely new. Something she didn't have a name for yet and wasn't ready to name. She looked back at the fire, and in her chest, the ancient thing that had opened its eyes in the dark of the car on that first morning shifted quietly in its sleep, turned over, pressed closer to the surface, like it was waking up. Chapter 3, it started with the ruins. Ayla had seen them from her window on the 2nd day. Stone structures rising above the eastern tree line, half swallowed by a century of growth, old enough to look like something the forest had tried to reclaim and failed. She'd asked Rory about them once, briefly, and he'd said they were old Ashvale holy sites, ancient, sealed for as long as anyone could remember. His grandmother had told him as a child that they opened for no one. She found herself walking toward them on a Tuesday morning. 3 weeks into her stay, for no reason she could articulate, she hadn't planned to. She'd woken early, dressed in the gray pre-dawn light, and her feet had simply taken her east. The forest was quiet in the way it only got in very early morning, not silent, but inward. The birds still asleep, the light coming down in long thin columns between the trees, the smell of wet pine and cold earth close and dense around her. She walked for 40 minutes through terrain she hadn't covered before and came out into a clearing and stopped. The ruins were bigger up close. Stone columns, some fallen, some still standing, arranged in a wide circle around a central platform. The stone was dark, almost black in the early light, and covered in carvings so old they'd smoothed at the edges, their detail half erased by weather and time. She didn't recognize most of the symbols, but in the center of the platform, unmistakably, was a moon, carved deep into the stone, full and detailed and surrounded by the same wolf figures she'd seen on Ashvale's iron gates. She stepped into the circle. The air changed, not dramatically, not like wind or temperature. Just a subtle shift of density, like stepping into a room where something had been present and recently left. The back of her neck prickled. She kept walking toward the central platform, and with each step the feeling intensified, not threatening, not cold. Warm, almost. Like walking toward a fire you hadn't yet seen. She reached the stone and put her hand on it. The carved moon lit up. Not light, exactly. Not a glow visible to the eye. But something under the stone, something in the stone, responded to her palm. She felt it move up through her hand and into her arm like warm water rising, like the stone recognized the shape of her touch. She yanked her hand back, stood there breathing. The feeling faded. The stone went back to being stone, but she could still feel it in her palm. That warmth, that response, that sense of something very old, deciding very deliberately to answer. She walked back to the pack house quickly. Didn't run, she refused to run, but quickly. Rory was in the training yard when she found him. He took one look at her face and said something to the enforcer beside him, and then he was walking toward her, closing the distance, his expression already sharpened with attention. "Tell me," he said, she told him. All of it, the walk she hadn't planned, the ruins, the carved moon, the warmth that moved through her hand like something recognizing her. He listened without interrupting. When she was done, he was quiet for a moment, jaw tight, eyes moving over her face like he was reading something. "Show me," he said. They went back together. Rory walked the perimeter of the circle first, reading it the way a trained alpha reads territory. Careful, systematic. One hand occasionally grazing the stone surfaces. Nothing responded to him. The column stayed stone. The air stayed ordinary. He came back to where she stood by the central platform and looked at her. "Try again," he said. "Rory. Ayla." His voice was quiet but absolute. "Put your hand on it." She looked at him for a moment. Then she turned to the platform and pressed her palm flat against the carved moon. It happened faster this time. The warmth came up immediately, stronger, deeper, rolling up her arm and into her chest like a current finding its channel. And this time it didn't stop at her arm. It spread down her ribs, into her stomach, up her throat, behind her eyes. A warmth so complete and so intentional it felt less like a physical sensation and more like being addressed. Like something enormous and impatient looking directly at her and saying, "Not in words, there you are." She heard Rory make a sound. She opened her eyes. She hadn't realized she'd closed them and looked at him. He was staring at the stone platform. Or not at the stone, exactly. At her hand on the stone, at the carvings which were now unmistakably visibly lit. A faint silver light moving through the carved lines like something liquid. Spreading out from where her palm made contact. Filling every groove and channel in the ancient stone, reaching the outer edges of the platform and then continuing. Reaching the fallen columns. Climbing the standing ones, illuminating symbols that had been dark and unreadable for longer than either of them had been alive. Rory was not a man who showed shock easily. He was showing it now. "Don't move," he said. His voice was very controlled. "I'm not moving. Don't take your hand off." She didn't. She stood there with the silver light moving through the stone beneath her palm and the warmth filling her chest and the sensation of being known by something ancient pressing against the inside of her ribs. And she was terrified, and she was not terrified at all. Both things at once, and she could feel Rory beside her, his presence, the warmth of him, the particular quality of his stillness, and that was the thing that kept her grounded. Not the light, not the ruins, him. She finally lifted her hand. The light faded slowly, like it didn't want to. They stood there in the quiet for a long moment. Then Rory turned to her, and his expression, carefully neutral, deliberately composed, had one thing in it he couldn't suppress, something that sat in his dark eyes and didn't move. It looked like awe. "There are stories," he said carefully, "old ones. My grandmother told them like myths, about a woman the moon goddess marks once in a generation, someone capable of waking the old magic. Restoring what was lost, he paused. They called her the Chosen. Isla looked at her own hand. The palm still held the ghost of warmth. That's a myth, she said. The stone just lit up, Ayla. She didn't have an answer for that. Over the next 2 weeks, things happened that she couldn't explain. An ancient wolf, Asheville's oldest, a man named Cater who had lived through 4 alphas and spoke to almost no one, stopped her in the main corridor one afternoon and looked at her for a long moment with pale, filmy eyes that somehow still held enormous clarity. Then he lowered himself, stiffly, painfully, old joints protesting, into a full kneel. She reached out and put her hand on his shoulder. Please don't do that, she said, her voice unsteady. Can't help it, he said simply. My wolf knows what it knows, word spread. It always did in packs. And something shifted in the way Asheville moved around her. Not fear, not exactly. More like the pack was rearranging itself slightly unconsciously. The way iron filings rearrange around a magnet. Orienting, and through all of it, Rory was there, not directing it, not capitalizing on it. Just there, beside her at the ruins when she went back. Beside her in the evening, on the stone steps, while she processed what was happening in halting sentences and silences he never tried to fill unnecessarily. His hand moved from 3 inches from hers to 2 inches, and then one night to a single inch without either of them acknowledging it. She was aware of it anyway. She was aware of everything about him in those evenings, the way the firelight worked in his dark curls, the particular way he listened, fully, without performance, the fact that he had never, not once, told her what to feel or what the waking magic meant for her future or what she should do about Darius. He never said Darius's name unless she said it first. One night she said, I keep thinking about whether he knew. Rory was quiet. Whether Darius knew what I was when he sent me away. What do you think? I think he didn't know. She paused. I think that's almost worse. Rory looked at her sidelong. Because it means he gave you up for nothing. Because it means he gave me up easily, she said. Like easy was possible. A long silence. The fire popped and settled. It shouldn't have been possible, Rory said. Very quiet, not looking at her. I need you to know I think that. Whatever agreement we made, whatever I gained from it, it shouldn't have been possible for him to do that. She looked at him. He was still looking at the fire. Rory, he turned. And they were closer than she'd registered. The evening had drawn them together degree by degree, the way warmth draws without announcing itself. His face was very close. His dark eyes were on hers. Thank you, she said, for saying that. He didn't say of course or don't mention it. He just held her gaze and nodded once, and the firelight moved between them. Her heart was doing something complicated. She didn't look away. Chapter 4. Something unexpected happened on Friday evening. They'd gone back together, as they did now every few days, to document what responded to her presence and what didn't. Rory with a journal he'd found in his grandmother's things, filled with old annotations in faded ink that matched the symbols on the stones. Isla with her hands and whatever the ruins decided to show her. More had opened each visit. The outer columns now lit completely when she entered the circle, automatically, without her needing to touch them. A sealed stone door in the north face of the largest column had cracked open on her third visit, revealing a chamber beyond full of artifacts and inscriptions and a stone altar that glowed a steady, permanent silver the moment she stepped inside, like it had been waiting, like the light had been held in reserve for precisely her. She had stood in that chamber and felt the goddess's attention the way you feel sun on your face, unmistakable. Personal, a warmth that knew her name. Tonight the ruins were lit before she even cleared the tree line. Every carved surface illuminated, soft and silver in the dusk. The whole circle alive with ancient light that made the forest around it look like it was leaning in. Rory stopped beside her at the edge of the clearing. It's getting stronger, he said, every time he looked at her. The silver light caught his features. The strong line of his jaw, the dark curls at his forehead. The particular intensity in his eyes that she'd stopped pretending she didn't feel. How do you feel, he asked. He always asked. Like myself, she said. More than I have in years. Something moved in his expression. They walked into the circle. She went to the central platform, instinctively, the way she always did, drawn to it the way a compass needle is drawn. She placed her palm against the carved moon. The silver light surged, warm and immediate, and the familiar warmth rolled through her chest and she exhaled slowly and let herself feel it. All of it. The power and the grief it had taken to get here. And the strange new shape her life had become, and the man standing a few feet behind her, watching over her the way he always did without ever once making her feel possessed. She lifted her hand, turned around. Rory was closer than she expected. He hadn't moved. She had, turning into the space between them. And now they were close enough that she could see the exact way the silver light was sitting in his eyes. Neither of them spoke. She didn't know who moved first. She didn't think it mattered. The space between them closed the way space is close when two things have been drawing toward each other long enough, not suddenly, not dramatically, but with the deep, quiet inevitability of a tide. His hand came up to her face. Careful. His thumb traced the line of her cheekbone, like he was reading something there, like he was giving her every opportunity to pull back. She didn't pull back. She reached up and touched his jaw, felt the muscle there, the warmth of his skin, the slight tension of a man holding himself very still. Ayla, he said, just her name. The way he'd said it in the dark of Darius's driveway on the first morning, like it was enough, like it was everything. I know, she said. He kissed her, slow and certain and deeply careful, the kiss of a man who understood what this meant and wasn't taking it lightly. She felt it everywhere, not just in the warmth of his mouth, but in her chest, in the soles of her feet on the ancient stone, in the silver light that pulsed stronger around them and then stronger still, flooding the clearing, climbing into the sky above the ruins in a column of light that the forest and the hills would see for miles. She didn't notice the light. She noticed his hands in her hair, his thumb against her jaw, the solid, unhurried presence of him, a man who had given her space and fire and unlocked doors and her own key, and never once asked her to be smaller than she. Was she kissed him back, and from the shadow of the eastern tree line, 30 feet from the edge of the ruins, a figure stood completely still. Darius. He had come in quietly through the eastern approach, the long route, the route that bypassed the main Ashvale gates because he hadn't wanted to announce himself, hadn't wanted the confrontation before he'd seen her. He had spent 6 weeks building the courage for tonight, 6 weeks of silence and growing dread as rumors reached him from other packs. Something is happening in Ashvale territory. Something is waking up. Something is centering around a woman with red hair and the moon goddess's mark. He had told himself the rumors were exaggerated. He had told himself she was fine, she was adjusting. He had made a pragmatic decision under impossible pressure and she would understand eventually. He had told himself a great many things in 6 weeks. Every single one of them dissolved the moment he stepped out of the tree line and saw the ruins lit silver and ancient and alive. And his mate, standing at the center of all that light with her red curls down and her hands on another man's face and her eyes closed and her mouth against Rory. Callahan's like the rest of the world had ceased to exist entirely. He stopped breathing. He stood there and he could not move and he could not look away and he felt something happened to him in that moment that he had no framework for. Breaking that wasn't loud, wasn't violent, was instead a silent and total collapse. The way a structure fails from the inside before anyone sees it fall, she was luminous. That was the thing he hadn't expected, the thing that drove the blade deepest. He had been prepared to feel jealousy. He had been prepared to feel rage, the territorial, instinctive rage of an alpha watching another man near his mate. He had not been prepared for the sight of her luminous, silver light moving through the ancient stone beneath her feet. Her red hair catching at her face. He could see her face in profile, eyes closed, completely unguarded, holding an expression he had never put there. Peace. She looked completely, devastatingly at peace. He took a single step backward, then another. He turned and walked back into the trees and didn't stop walking until the light of the ruins was gone, and the forest closed around him, and there was nothing left but dark and cold, and the sound of his own heartbeat doing something it had never done before, stumbling. He stood in the dark between the trees and pressed his back against the bark of an ancient pine and worked to breathe and could not stop seeing it, could not stop seeing her face, that expression, the way she'd reached up and touched Callahan's jaw like she already knew the shape of him. He had done this. He understood it now with a clarity that felt surgical, the fullness of it. He hadn't traded away a burden. He hadn't made a difficult but necessary decision. He had handed Ayla, who had brought him coffee he hadn't asked for, and curled into him at night, and believed, completely and without reservation, that he loved her back. He had handed her to a man who had the simple good sense to see what she was. And she had become, in 6 weeks, something he couldn't touch. Not because of Rory, because of herself, he started walking again, back the way he'd come. Back toward the Ashvale boundary, back toward his own territory, back toward everything he had chosen over her. He had come here to ask for forgiveness. He understood now, in the cold dark, with the silver light finally gone from his vision, that forgiveness wasn't the thing he'd lost. What he'd lost was her, not to Rory. To the version of herself she'd been becoming all along. The version he'd been too loud and too certain and too careless to see. And behind him in the ancient ruins, the light burned brighter than it had in 3 centuries. The moon goddess's chosen stood in her circle. And she didn't know he'd been there. She was too busy being home. Chapter 5, she found out from Cater. The old wolf found her at breakfast, early before most of the pack was down. When the kitchen was still quiet and the morning light was just beginning to come through the east-facing windows in long, warm strips, he sat across from her without being invited, which was unusual enough that she put down her cup and looked at him. His pale eyes were steady. "The Blackridge Alpha is at the northern border," he said. "Been there since last night." Ayla went very still. "He came alone? 2 enforcers. That's all." Cater paused. "He's been there since before dawn, just standing there. Not pushing, not demanding, just standing, she absorbed that. Darius standing quietly at a border was so unlike him that it almost frightened her more than aggression would have. Darius loud, she knew. Darius filling rooms, Darius whose voice carried through closed doors. Darius who announced himself in every space he entered simply by existing in it at full volume, that man she had a map for, that man she had spent 2 years learning to navigate. Darius standing silently at a border in the dark, waiting, that was a man she didn't recognize. Does Rory know? She asked. Alpha Callahan was notified an hour ago. She pushed back from the table. She found Rory in his study, standing at the wide window that looked north, hands clasped behind his back, jaw set. He heard her come in and turned, and she could see in his face that he'd been deciding how to tell her, and was both relieved and unsettled that she already knew. How long are you going to let him stand there? She asked. That depends on you. She looked at him. This is your territory, she said. That's your call, Ayla. He said her name the way he always did, like it meant something standing alone. He didn't come here for my territory. You know that. She moved to the window and stood beside him and looked north, as if she could see through the miles of pine and morning light to where Darius was standing at the border with two enforcers and whatever was left of his certainty. She thought about the envelope on the nightstand, final and binding. She thought about Gregor's wide back moving down the hallway ahead of her, about the empty stairs, the empty corridor, the front door opening onto cold air and a man she didn't know waiting in the dark. She thought about her bags, packed by someone else's hands while she slept. Let him in, she said. Rory looked at her. Are you sure? I'm not going to heal anything by making him stand in the cold. She paused. And I'm done letting Darius make decisions about my life without me in the room. Something shifted in Rory's expression, something that looked like pride and something that looked like pain, both at once, quickly controlled. He went to his desk and sent the order. She went back to her room and sat at the edge of the bed and looked at her hands. Her right palm, the one she pressed against the carved moon, had a faint silver mark now, had for a week, not a scar, not a burn. More like a watermark, visible only in certain light, the shape of a crescent sitting in the center of her palm like something signed there. She'd shown Rory. He'd looked at it for a long time without speaking and then looked up at her with those dark eyes and said, very quietly, the old texts call that the goddess's seal. She pressed her left hand over it now, breathed. She had 20 minutes before Darius reached the pack house. She used them to do nothing, just sit, just breathe, just let herself feel the full weight of what was coming without running from it, or managing it, or deciding in advance what shape her emotions were allowed to take. She owed herself that much. When she finally stood and looked in the mirror, she barely recognized the woman looking back. Her red curls were down. She'd stopped pulling them back weeks ago, let them fall the way they wanted to fall. Her face was different. Not older, exactly. More present. Like she'd moved into herself more completely, taken up more of her own space. Her eyes were the same dark green they'd always been. But there was something behind them now that hadn't been there before. Something that had been sleeping. She didn't change her clothes. Didn't arrange herself. Didn't perform composure she didn't feel or pretend to feeling she didn't have. She walked downstairs as she was. Rory was waiting at the bottom of the stairs. He looked at her once, a single, sweeping look that took in everything and settled, and then fell into step beside her without a word. Not ahead of her, not behind her, beside her. Exactly, even. And she felt the solid warmth of his presence like a hand against her back that wasn't touching her. They walked to the main receiving room together. Darius was already inside. She hadn't expected the shock of him, of seeing him in person after 6 weeks in Rory's space in a room that wasn't his. He was big, the way she remembered, broad and dark-haired, and he filled the room the way he always filled rooms or tried to. But something had gone out of him. Not his size, not his physical presence, something else. The particular quality of a man who has never doubted himself standing in a room where his doubt has preceded him. He turned when she came in, and she watched his face do something she had never seen it do in 2 years. It broke. Just for a moment. Just 1 second of unguarded devastation crossing his features before he pulled it back and set his jaw and straightened. Ayla, he said. His voice was different, still deep, still carrying, but something had gone out of the volume. Like someone had turned a dial down 2 notches from where it always lived. Darius, she said. They looked at each other across the room. Rory stood to her left, a half step back, silent and still present. She was aware of him the way she was always aware of him, as something steady, something that didn't shift under pressure. Darius's eyes moved to Rory, and something moved through his face, something hot and controlled and quickly buried, then back to her. Can we speak privately, he asked. No, she said. He absorbed that. She watched him absorb it, watched the small flinch he managed to mostly hide, watched him recalibrate. Ayla, say what you came to say, Darius. A muscle in his jaw jumped. The old Darius, the loud one, the one who claimed rooms like territories, would have pushed back against the tone. would have pulled rank, pulled history, pulled the 2 years of shared space and shared warmth, and whatever he'd told himself that was. Asterius just breathed. I made a mistake, he said. The words landed in the room and sat there. She waited to feel something enormous happen inside her, some great release or some great detonation, one or the other. Instead, she felt something quieter, something more final. Yes, she said, you did. I was desperate. He took a step toward her. The pack was drowning. The debts, the attacks on the eastern border, the famine last winter. I was running out of options, and Callahan offered protection and I... He stopped, started again. I convinced myself it was the right call, that you'd be safe, that I could fix things and come back and explain. You packed my bags while I slept, she said, silence. You didn't say goodbye, she said. You didn't come to the door. You didn't look me in the eye and tell me what you were doing. You sent Gregor. She kept her voice level, not cold. Level, you sent Gregor Darius like I was a debt being collected. He closed his eyes. I know, he said. Do you? She tilted her head slightly. Because I keep wondering. If you'd looked at me, if you'd had to say it to my face, would you have done it? Or was the envelope a way of not having to know what it was? He opened his eyes. And there it was, the thing she'd been wondering about for 6 weeks, the thing she'd needed to see to believe. Real remorse. Not the performance of it, not the pride-saving version of it, but the actual thing, sitting in his face like a wound. I couldn't look at you, he said, because I knew if I did, I wouldn't do it, and I thought I had to. He paused, his voice dropped. I thought you were the thing I could afford to lose. The room was completely quiet. And now? She asked. He looked at her, at all of her. The curls and the steady eyes and the silver marks she knew he could see on her palm even across the room. The way every alpha could see marks that were meant to be seen. His gaze moved to Rory once and came back. Now I know what I lost, he said simply. She breathed. She waited for the part of her that had loved him. And it had been real. She knew that. She'd always known that. She'd loved him with the wholehearted, absolute conviction of a woman who had never once doubted she was loved back. She waited for that part to surge up and ask her to forgive him. To ask her to consider what 2 years had built. To remind her of every moment that had felt like home before the envelope changed the meaning of all the other moments. It didn't surge. It just ached quietly, steadily, the way old things ache, like a bone that healed right but remembers the break. I believe you, she said. His face shifted, the beginning of something, relief maybe, or hope. I believe you know what you lost, she said. And I'm sorry that it hurts. I am, she meant it. But Darius, I needed you to fight for me before I left. I needed you to choose me when choosing me was hard. I can't give you credit for wanting me back now that I'm... She paused, looked at her palm. Now that everything has changed. You think I want you back because of that? His voice rose, the first flash of the old volume quickly reeled back in. He breathed. Ayla, I was at the border before I heard any of the rumors. I came before I knew about the ruins or the light or any of it. I came because I haven't slept since the morning you left. She looked at him for a long moment. She believed that too. I know, she said softly. I know you mean that, then. It's too late, Darius. 3 words. She said them without cruelty and without satisfaction and without the triumphant certainty she might have imagined she'd feel if she'd imagined this moment in the first weeks. She said them the way you say something true that you wish weren't true. Quietly. Finally. He didn't speak. Not because of what I've become, she said. Not because of the ruins or the magic or any of it, because of who I am now. Because I've been here 6 weeks and I've been treated like a person every single day and I've remembered what that feels like and I can't unknow it. She paused. You made me feel like something that could be transferred. I don't think you meant to make me feel that way, but you did. And I can't come back from that. Darius looked at her for a long time. Then he looked at Rory. Rory said nothing. Held his gaze with the particular steadiness of a man who has nothing to apologize for and knows it. Something moved through Darius's face, the full and complicated passage of a man arriving at a truth he'd been trying to outrun. It moved through him, and it was painful to watch, and she didn't look away, because she owed him that much. To witness it, to not make it smaller than it was. He looked back at her one last time. Take care of yourself, he said. His voice was very low. I will, she said. He walked to the door. He stopped with his hand on the frame, didn't turn around. He's a good man, he said. Callahan. A pause. Better than me. Then he walked out. She stood in the silence he left behind and felt not victory, not relief. Something more complicated and more honest than either of those things. The particular quiet of a chapter ending that you loved and needed to close. Rory moved beside her. He didn't say anything. He just stood there, close and solid and warm, and let the silence be what it was. After a long moment, she turned to him. His dark eyes were on her face, reading her, careful, unhurried. Are you all right? He asked. She considered the question honestly. Yes, she said. I think I actually am. He reached out and took her hand, the one with the silver mark. He held it carefully, like something worth being careful with, and looked down at the crescent in her palm, and then back up at her face. There's something I need to show you tomorrow, he said. What? an invitation. From 4-pack alphas. They've heard what's happening here. They want to come. His jaw was tight with something that wasn't worry exactly. Something more like awe still. The same awe that had been living in him since the ruins first lit up. They're not the last ones who'll come, Ayla. This is what's waking up in you, what you carry. It's going to change everything. She looked at their joined hands. The silver mark caught the light. I know, she said, and for the first time since the envelope on the nightstand, since the cold driveway and the dark road and the silent pack house she'd walked out of, she wasn't afraid of what was coming. She was ready for it. Chapter 6. They came from every direction. North first, the Ironveil pack, whose alpha was an old woman named Sarah who had led her pack for 30 years and was not given to sentiment or spectacle. She arrived with 6 wolves and no ceremony and walked directly to Ayla in the Ashvale courtyard and looked at her for a long, measuring moment with eyes that had seen everything and discarded most of it. Then she inclined her head. Not a bow. Something more deliberate than a bow. The considered chosen deference of a woman who had bowed to nothing in 30 years and was now deciding, with full awareness, to make an exception. I felt it from 2 territories away, Sarah said, when the ruins opened. Her voice was dry and matter-of-fact, like she was reporting weather. Woke me out of a dead sleep. I haven't felt anything like it since I was a girl and my grandmother told me stories I didn't believe. What stories? Ayla asked. Sarah looked at her steadily. That the goddess doesn't abandon her wolves forever, she said. That she marks someone once in a long while. To come back and wake what's been sleeping. A pause. I didn't believe it then. And now? Sarah almost smiled. You're standing in front of me, she said simply. The East Pack came 2 days later, then the Southern Coastal Pack. Then a pack from the mountain territory so far north that their alpha, young Sirius, a man of very few words, had traveled 4 days to get here and arrived with frost still in his hair and went straight to one knee when he saw Ayla. Cross the courtyard. Rory watched all of it from careful proximity. He kept himself present without inserting himself. It was a balance Ayla noticed and appreciated in the way she noticed and appreciated everything he did, with a quiet, growing certainty that this was what it looked like when someone was actually on your side. Not managing you. Not positioning himself around your power for his own benefit, just beside you, steady and unhurried and real. The night before the gathering, the formal assembly of all the arrived alphas that Rory had organized at Ayla's reluctant agreement, she couldn't sleep. She was in the ruins. She came here alone most nights now. Had been for weeks. The circle was always lit when she arrived, always warming when she entered, and the chamber behind the northern column had become something she thought of as hers, the stone altar glowing its permanent silver. The inscription she was slowly learning to read with Cater's help, the sense of the goddess's attention resting on her like light rests on water, present, patient, without demand. Tonight she stood at the central platform with both hands on the carved moon and let the warmth move through her and asked the question she'd been carrying for weeks. Why me? Not in words. She didn't speak out loud. She just held the question in her chest and let it rise through her palms into the stone and waited. The answer didn't come in words either. It came in a feeling, a vast, unhurried, enormously patient feeling, like being held by something so much larger than herself that scale stopped meaning anything. And inside that feeling was a kind of knowing that bypassed language entirely and went straight to the place behind her ribs where the truest things lived, not because you are the most powerful, because you are the most ready to carry it without being changed by it. She stood there for a long time. The silver light breathed around her. When she finally lifted her hands and turned to leave, Rory was sitting on the fallen column at the edge of the circle, elbows on his knees, watching her with those dark eyes that had stopped pretending to be neutral where she was concerned. She hadn't heard him arrive. How long have you been there? She asked. Long enough. She crossed the circle to him. He stood when she got close, automatically, without thinking about it, the way he always moved toward her without making it a performance. Nervous about tomorrow? He asked. No, she paused. That's the strange part. I should be. You shouldn't. He reached up and tucked a red curl behind her ear, a thing he'd started doing recently. Small and habitual, like it was already something they'd been doing for years. You know what you are. I'm still figuring out what I am. You know enough. His hand stayed at her jaw. His thumb traced her cheekbone the same way it had the night they kissed, slow and deliberate and asking nothing. He walked into a room today and 4 alphas who have never bent to anything bent, not because of the magic, because of you, the way you spoke to them, the way you listened. His voice was quiet. Ayla, the magic is the confirmation. You were always this. She looked at him in the silver light. Her chest was full of something she didn't try to name or manage or contain. She reached up and put her hand over his where it rested against her jaw. When this is over, she said. When tomorrow is done and the packs go home and things settle, I need to say something to you. His eyes didn't move from hers. Say it now, he said quietly. Rory, say it now, Ayla, she breathed. You gave me a key, she said, on the first day. You put it in my hand and you didn't explain it, and it sounds like such a small thing. But it wasn't a small thing. She felt his hand tighten slightly at her jaw. You gave me fire and you gave me space and you never once asked me to be grateful for it or smaller than I was in you. She stopped steadied. You made me feel like the fact that I existed was enough. Not what I could do or what I was becoming. Just me, just Ayla. Her voice was very quiet. I haven't felt that in a long time. He was looking at her like she was the only thing in the world worth looking at. You are enough, he said. Low and absolute. You were enough the moment I saw you cross that gravel in the dark at 5 in the morning, with your whole life dismantled around you and your chin. Up anyway. He shook his head slightly. I was done then. I've been done since that morning. She kissed him. Not the way the first kiss had been. Tentative, slow, two people stepping carefully towards something enormous. This was different. This was certain. This was a woman who knew what she was choosing and was choosing it with both hands. He kissed her back with everything he had. The ruins blazed. Every column, every carved surface, every ancient inscription lit simultaneously. Not silver now, but white, the kind of white that has gold in it. The kind of light that the oldest wolves present the next morning would later say they had seen from 3 territories away and thought for 1. Breathless moment was the moon coming down. They didn't notice the light, they noticed each other. The gathering was held at midday in the great clearing west of the ruins. 7 alphas stood in a wide arc, Rory to her right, Sarah to her left. The others arranged by age and territory in the old traditional way, their packs assembled behind them in respectful silence. The sky was high and pale blue, and the light was the particular clean gold of late morning. And the ruins, visible above the treeline, glowed their permanent silver even in daylight now, had been since the night before. Ayla stood at the center. She wore no title, no crown, no formal Luna robes. Just her own clothes, her red curls loose and falling past her shoulders. The silver mark on her right palm visible to anyone looking. Everyone was looking. She had thought she would need words prepared. Had spent 3 days trying to write something and discarding every draft because everything she wrote sounded like a speech, and this wasn't a speech. This was something that needed to come from somewhere below language. She looked out at the gathered alphas and their packs, hundreds of wolves, all still, all watching, and she just spoke. She talked about what it felt like to wake up to an envelope, to be moved like something without a voice, to walk out of a life she'd believed in and into a dark morning with strangers and nothing but her own, heartbeat that refused to break. She talked about what it meant to be given a key on the first day, to be given space and fire and the right to figure out who she was without someone else deciding in advance. She talked about the ruins, about the warmth that moved through her hands, about the question she'd asked in the dark and the answer that had no words, about the goddess's patience, the long, enormous patience of something that had been waiting for the right time, the right person, not the most powerful person, but the most ready. She talked about what she thought the old magic was for. It isn't a weapon, she said. It isn't a throne. It isn't a way to make one pack stronger than all the others. She looked at Sarah, at the mountain alpha with the frost still in his hair, at Rory, who was watching her with those dark, steady eyes. It's a memory. It's the werewolf world remembering what it was before it got so loud, before we started measuring everything by dominance and debt and what we could take from each other. She paused. I think it woke up because we need it. I think it found me because I know what it costs when the people who are supposed to protect you treat you like something that can be transferred. Complete silence. I'm not asking to lead you, she said. I'm not asking for anything. I'm saying come to the ruins when you need to remember. Bring your wolves who have forgotten what they are. Let the old magic show them. She looked down at her palm, at the crescent sitting there, patient and permanent. The goddess didn't mark me to rule over you. She marked me to show you the door is open. The first alpha to move was Sarah. She went to one knee, then the mountain alpha, then the eastern pack, then the others one by one, until all 7 were kneeling and the wolves behind them were following, not from command, not from pack law or political calculation, but from something older and more honest. The same animal instinct that had made Ashvale's oldest wolf kneel in a corridor. The same thing that had made every wolf she passed lower their head. Her own wolf rising to meet something it recognized. Rory was the last. He looked at her as he went to one knee. Looked at her in a way that made the crowd of kneeling wolves and the blazing ruins and the high gold sky completely irrelevant. And in his eyes was something she could finally name. She had been loved before. She had believed in it. Had built 2 years on top of it, had woken up beside it and gone to sleep beside it and trusted it completely until an envelope told her how much it was worth. This was different. This was a man kneeling not because she had power and not because she was marked and not because it was politic or impressive or useful. This was a man kneeling because he thought she was the most remarkable thing he'd ever seen, and she believed him because she believed herself now. She reached down and took his hand and lifted him back to his feet. He stood, and he stayed exactly where he was, beside her, exactly even, exactly where he'd stood every day for 6 weeks. Not in front of her, not behind her, beside. She turned to face the gathered packs. The ruins blazed white and gold above the tree line, and Ayla, who had woken up to an envelope, who had cried for an hour in a dark car and stopped because something ancient inside her refused to stay broken, who had walked into a stranger's territory with a key in her hand and found out what she was, stood in the light of the moon goddess's mark and felt, for the first time in her life, exactly the size she had always been. Not too much, not too small, exactly right. If you enjoy the story, please leave a comment. And if you are new to my channel, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss out on my next.